Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Becoming Human, Matter and Meaning in an Anti-Black World by Zakiya Iman Jackson. Narrated by Diana Blue. On Becoming Human, an Introduction. Becoming Human, Matter and Meaning in an Anti-Black World argues that key texts of 20th century African diasporic literature and visual culture generate unruly conceptions of being and materiality that creatively disrupt the human-animal distinction and its persistent raciality. There has historically been a persistent question regarding the quality of blackened people's humanity. African diasporic literature and cultural production have often been interpreted as a reaction to this racialization, a plea for human recognition. Becoming Human takes a different approach, investigating key African-American, African, and Caribbean literary and visual texts that critique and depose prevailing conceptions of the human found in Western science and philosophy. These texts move beyond a critique of bestialization to generate new possibilities for rethinking ontology. Our being, fleshy materiality, and the nature of what exists and what we can claim to know about existence. The literary and visual culture studied in Becoming Human neither rely on animal abjection to define being human nor reestablish human recognition within liberal humanism as an antidote to racialization. Consequently, they displace the very terms of blackened animality as objection. Becoming Human argues that African diasporic cultural production does not coalesce into a unified tradition that merely seeks inclusion into liberal humanist conceptions of the human, but, rather, frequently alters the meaning and significance of being human and engages in imaginative practices of worlding from the perspective of a history of blackness's bestialization and thingification. The process of imagining black people as an empty vessel, a non-being, a nothing, an ontological zero, coupled with the violent imposition of colonial myths and racial hierarchy. Toni Morrison's Beloved, Nalo Hopkinson's Brown Girl in the Ring, Audre Lorde's The Cancer Journals, Wangechi Mutu's Histology of the Different Classes of Uterine Tumors, Octavia Butler's Bloodchild, Ezra Mlechai's Chicken Series, and key speeches of Frederick Douglass both critique and displace the racializing assumptive logic that has grounded Western sciences and philosophy's debates on how to distinguish human identity from that of the animal, the object, and the non-human more generally. In complementary but highly distinct ways, these literary and visual texts articulate being human in a manner that neither relies on animal objection nor reestablishes liberal humanism as the authority on being human. Instead, they creatively respond to the animalization of blackened being by generating a critical praxis of being, paradigms of relationality, and epistemologies that alternately expose, alter, or reject not only the racialization of the human-animal distinction found in Western science and philosophy, but also challenge the epistemic and material terms under which the specter of animal life acquires its authority. What emerges from this questioning is an unruly sense of being, knowing, feeling existence, one that necessarily disrupts the foundations of the current hegemonic mode of the human. While we often isolate African diasporic literary studies from the fields of science and philosophy, I contend that African diasporic literature and visual culture introduce dissidents into philosophical and scientific frameworks that dominate definitions of the human. Evolution, rights, property, and legal personhood. By reading Western philosophy and science through the lens of African diasporic literature and visual culture, We can situate and often problematize authoritative, even if troubling, conceptualizations of being and material existence, demonstrating that literary and visual cultural studies have an important role to play in the histories of science and philosophy. Using literature and visual art, my study identifies conceptions of being that do not rely on the animal's negation, as repudiation of the animal has historically been essential to producing classes of abject humans. Becoming Human reveals that science and philosophy share many characteristics with literature and visual art, despite the espoused objectivity and procedural integrity of scientific and philosophical discourses. In debates concerning the specificity of human identity with respect to the animal, science and philosophy both possess foundational and recursive investments in figurative and arguably literary narratives that conceptualize Blackness as trope, metaphor, symbol, and a kind of fiction. Instead of thinking of philosophy and science as separate and unrelated sites of knowledge production, my study reveals their historical entanglement and shared assumptive logic with regard to Blackness. As conceived by evolutionary theory and Western Enlightenment philosophy, extending into legalistic conceptions of personhood, property, and rights, anti-Blackness has sought to justify its defacing logics and arithmetic by suggesting that Black people are most representative of the abject animalistic dimensions of humanity, or the beast. While many scholars have critiqued the conflation of Black humans with animals found in Enlightenment discourses, I argue that prior scholarship has fundamentally misrecognized the logic behind the confluence of animality and racialization. I reinterpret Enlightenment thought not as Black exclusion or denied humanity, but rather as the violent imposition and appropriation, inclusion and recognition, of blackened humanity in the interest of plasticizing that very humanity whereby the animal is one but not the only form Blackness is thought to encompass. Plasticity is a mode of transmogrification whereby the fleshy being of Blackness is experimented with as if it were infinitely malleable lexical and biological matter, such that Blackness is produced as sub-superhuman at once, a form where form shall not hold, potentially everything and nothing at the register of ontology. It is perhaps prior scholarship's interpretation of this tradition as denied humanity that has facilitated a call for greater inclusion as a corrective to what it deems is a historical exclusion of Blackness. One consequence of this orientation is that many scholars have essentially ignored alternative conceptions of being and the non-human that have been produced by blackened people. This project examines how African diasporic literary and visual texts generate conceptions of being that defy the disparagement of the non-human and the animal. The terms of African diasporic art and literature's canonization have suggested that African diasporic cultural production does little more than refute racism and petition for assimilation into the very definition of humanity that produces racial hierarchy, or, as Henry Louis Gates Jr. would put it in The Signifying Monkey, a theory of African-American literary criticism. The texts of the slave could only be read as testimony of defilement. The slave's representation and reversal of the master's attempt to transform a human being into a commodity, and the slave's simultaneous verbal witness of the possession of a humanity shared in common with Europeans. Rather than seek an assimilationist transubstantiation via the talking book, the texts in my study are better understood as providing unruly yet generative conceptions of being, generative because they are unruly. Yet, they are not always framed as an explicit critique of the dominant, thereby refusing the terms of liberal multicultural recognition, which require either the evocation of animalized depictions of Blackness in order to point out the suffering these images cause or the reversal of stereotype in a bid for inclusion. Instead, they often just get on with upending and inventing at the edge of legibility. The chapters in this book explore the critique and innovative thought that emerge from within the contradictions of competing conceptions of modernity's crucible, the human. I argue that the cultural production examined in the following sections reveals a contrapuntal potential in Black thought and expressive cultures with regard to the human-animal distinction. In order to facilitate a fuller appreciation of the conceptions of ontology identified in Becoming Human, I pose three arguments that fundamentally reframe the animalization of Blackness. First, I argue that philosophers' and historians' emphasis on anti-Black formulations of African reason and history have overlooked the centrality of gender, sexuality, and maternity in the animalization of Blackness. Namely, I argue that Black female flesh persistently functions as the limit case of the human and its matrix figure. This is largely explained by the fact that historically, the delineation between species has fundamentally hinged on the question of reproduction. In other words, the limit of the human has been determined by how the means and scene of birth are interpreted. Second, I demonstrate that Eurocentric humanism needs Blackness as a prop in order to erect whiteness, to define its own limits, and to designate humanity as an achievement, as well as to give form to the category of the animal. Third, I look beyond recognition as human as the solution to the bestialization of Blackness by drawing out the dissident, ontological, and materialist thinking in Black expressive culture, lingering on the modes of being, knowing, feeling that gesture towards the overturning of man. In debates concerning the specificity of human identity with respect to the animal, science and philosophy foundationally and recursively construct Black femaleness, maternity, and sexuality as an essential index of abject human animality. Furthermore, gender, maternity, and sexuality are central to the autopoiesis of racialized animalization that philosophers, theoreticians, and historians of race hope to displace. While Black feminist and queer theories of race have underlined the intersectional nature of gender, race, and sexuality, a few studies have ventured to identify the autopoietic operations of these very intersections. Therefore, any study that attempts to provide an account of how racialization operates must offer an explanation of the intransigent, recursive, and self-referential and reanimating power of abject constructs of Black gender and sexuality. Contributing to studies of the longue durée of anti-Blackness and afterlife of slavery, I offer a materialist theory of both Blackness's ontologized plasticization and the temporality of anti-Blackness, whereby I extend and revise Sylvia Winter's theories of sociogeny and the autopoiesis of racialization. In other words, anti-Blackness's auto-institution and stable replication as a system and its consequences for our being both bios and mythos. Much has been written about the roles of reason and history in the production of dehumanization. This discourse is most commonly represented by Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel's claim that the African, never attaining immanent differentiation or the clarity of self-knowledge, is imprisoned by immediacy and is, in other words, ahistorical. However, in the chapters that follow, I am most interested in the roles of gender and sexuality in the production of Blackness as animal man. Negating discourses on African history and reason are not the only and perhaps not even the most frequently deployed concepts through which the African is posited as animal. Gender and sexuality feature prominently in animalizing discourse as a measure of both the quality of the mind and an index of spirit. gendered and sexual discourses on the African are inextricable from those pertaining to reason, historicity, and civilization, as purported observations of gender and sexuality were frequently used to provide evidence of the inherent abject quality of Black people's human animality from the earliest days of the invention of the human. Christian Europe had already privileged gender and sexuality as indicators of civilization, and visual observation, namely cultural, situated perspective, had not emerged as an epistemological problem for thought. During the so-called Age of Discovery, observation and the visual, imagined as transparent and in opposition to the opaque, could overcome the practical problem of differences in worldlings. Thus, observation of gender and sex was deployed in the interest of producing race as a visualizable fact. The body was believed to provide presence, a supplement to the immateriality of reason and historicity. The Black body's fleshiness was aligned with that of animals and set in opposition to European spirit and mind. As Winthrop Jordan documents in White Over Black, American Attitudes Toward the Negro, 1550 to 1812, Africans and apes were linked through physiognomic comparison and sexuality. Englishmen had only encountered non-human primates vicariously through travel writing and gossip. They were unfamiliar with anthropoid primates such as gorillas, chimpanzees, and orangutans. Encounters with sub-Saharan Africans occurred adjacent to these encounters, leading to unbridled speculations linking primates and Africans. These speculations were an outgrowth of an epistemological foundation that had already been circulating tales of mythical human-animal hybrids and humanoid animals based on ancient reports and medieval morality. Africa was seen as a land of new monsters. Though Africans were rarely perceived as a kind of ape, it was more commonly suggested that Africans and apes shared libidinous sexual characteristics or were sexually linked. For the English, sex was barbaric, as the body was host to sin, and when they did not perceive Africans as observing the same Christian worldview, they evaluated them negatively. According to Jordan, Africans were linked with sins of the body, and their blackness was believed to testify to their unlawful and ungodly nature. The purported carnality of the African female was thought to be exemplary of African sexuality more generally, as the female sex was the measure of a race's civility. While the discussion here notes Jordan's comments on the role of sexuality in the anti-Black production of the discourse of African animality, one could reasonably suggest that at times this now classic text naturalizes racial difference as a visualizable fact of the body with immediate unitary aesthetic effects for Europeans. In Kathleen Brown's reinterpretation of Jordan's early modern sources, she notes that divisions of household labor between the sexes, manners and customs, and mores were as, if not more, central to West Africans' functions as foils to the emergent concept of Europeanness as skin color and hair texture. Despite what one might expect from reading Jordan's conclusions, skin color was not the essence of racial difference in the pre-1650 sources. Writers of the period devoted considerable space to descriptions of indigenous peoples' adornments of their bodies, the consequences of which were no less startling to English observers than differences which allegedly originated in nature. The common criteria for bestial otherness were measures of degrees of civility in Iberian and English sources rather than complexion. One of the most common refrains in early European accounts of people living near the so-called torrid zones was "the people goeth all naked." The appearance of allegedly naked bodies had contradictory evocations. On the one hand, nakedness conjured images of the Garden of Eden and a prelapsarian state of mind, arrested development, and innocence. On the other hand, nudity also communicated sexual promiscuity and the absence of civility to Europeans, which they sometimes described as beastly living. Rather than simply or decisively a matter of color, projected sexual mores and virility were crucial determinants for measuring the being of Africans. As Jennifer Morgan has shown, the imagined proof of the enslaved's incivility and degraded humanity was frequently located in African females' purported childbearing and child-rearing practices, whereby the breast of the enslaved took on mythic proportions. In this context, the breast took on an emblematic status. European writers turned to Black women as evidence of cultural inferiority that ultimately became encoded as racial difference. Monstrous bodies became enmeshed with savage behavior as the icon of women's breasts became evidence of tangible barbarism. African female breasts were depicted as exaggeratedly long, even as bestial additional limbs. As Morgan asserts, what this history demonstrates is not that gender operated as a more profound category of difference than race, but rather that racialist discourse was deeply imbued with ideas about gender and sexual difference that, indeed, became manifest only in contact with each other. What observers and commentators did not question was their own universality, their grid of intelligibility, and how it conditioned not just what they saw or even how they observed, but how they knew what they saw. This is an issue of perception that exceeds the question of what was actually observed and what was made up or imagined. Instead of debating the facticity of a story, it is imperative to interrogate how we would go about evaluating any empirical truth claim. This calls into question how we know what we know, not only about a world out there, but also how we know ourselves. Epistemology is a problem not of the past, but one that is constituent with our being. By the 19th century, the chain of beings, physical anthropology, using human and animal physical measurements, sealed the connection between Africans and apes as scientific fact. One must only recall the manner in which Sarah Bartman, the so-called Hottentot Venus, was displayed for the British and French public as both pornographic spectacle and scientific specimen. Her physiognomic characteristics, posterior and genitals, were presumed to signal a difference in sexuality that was pronounced enough to further divide the categories of female and woman. An idealized white femininity became paradigmatic of woman through the abjection of the perceived African female. Female, rather than woman. African femaleness is paradoxically placed under the sign of absence, lack, and pathology in order to present an idealized Western European bourgeois femininity as the normative embodiment of womanhood. In this context, the potential recognition of womanhood in Blackness, and especially Black femininity, is placed in tension with the discourses on Black female sexuality. Hortense Spillers put it this way: in the universe of unreality and exaggeration, the Black female is, if anything, a creature of sex, but sexuality touches her nowhere. The female has so much sexual potential that she has none at all that anybody is ready to recognize at the level of culture. The perpetual specter of Black female lack in the realm of culturally and historically produced femininity at the register of both performativity and morphology produces the African female as paradigmatically indeterminate in terms of gender and paradigmatically the human's limit case. The spectacularization of the posterior has perhaps blinded our critical attention to the manner with which ontologizing racial characterization not only divides and stratifies gender, but also calls into question the very meaning of sexual difference. Shifting critical attention from the posterior to the breast, I demonstrate that racism not only posits cleavage in womanhood such that Black womanhood is imagined to be a gender apart, an other gender, but also an other sex. Additionally, anti-blackness itself is sexuating, whereby so-called biological sex is modulated by culture. In other words, at the registers of both sign and matter, anti-blackness produces differential biocultural effects of both gender and sex. Such a frame raises the stakes of recent feminist materialism's inquiry into both the inter-intra-actional relations of discursivity and materiality, as well as the gendered politics of hylomorphism, or the form-matter distinction. Thus, anti-Black formulations of gender and sexuality are actually essential rather than subsidiary to the metaphysical figuration of matter, objects, and animals that recent critical theory hopes to dislodge. I argue the plasticization of blackened people at the register of sign and materiality is central to the prevailing logics and praxis of the human and sex gender. Recent scholarship in Black queer theory suggests we can no longer presume that gender is a metonym for woman and sexuality a metonym for queer. The wanton manipulation of gendered and sexual codes is essential to the production of anti-Blackness generally, irrespective of self-identification. Queer theory scholars have argued that the masculine-feminine dynamic is on the register of the symbolic rather than the biological, even though it masquerades as if the borders dividing masculine from feminine map neatly onto the natural polarity of sex. What feminism has not sufficiently interrogated is the manner in which the masculine-feminine dichotomy is racialized. We have neither adequately identified that racialization is intrinsic to the legibility of its codes and grammar, namely that anti-Blackness constitutes and disrupts sex-gender constructs, nor determined the consequence this has for the matter of the sexed body. Such a predicament creates conditions of gendered and sexual anxiety and instability. As Spillers states, in the historic outline of dominance, the respective subject positions of female and male adhere to no symbolic integrity. As their meaning can be stripped or appropriated arbitrarily by power, as Black females' claim to womanhood and femininity still tends to rest too solidly on the subtle and shifting calibrations of a liberal ideology. Thus, while codes of gender are cultural rather than prediscursive, one must also attend to the matter of the body, as the body's materiality is thought to provide the observable fact of animality. The African's failure to achieve humanity has historically been thought to be rooted in the body, in an insatiable appetite that made it impossible for the African to rise above the body, the organ, in order to come back to itself in self-reflection, never achieving the distance required in order to contemplate the self. Gender, and especially sexuality, was leveraged against counterclaims acknowledging Black reason and civility. For thinkers such as Thomas Jefferson, Black gender and Black kinship stood as an impediment to Black progress. So while it seems that the human must be reconsidered, a critical engagement with the discourses of gender and sexuality must be coincident to our interrogation of both dominant and emergent praxes of being. At this time, most feminist scholars can agree that an intersectional approach to the question of subjectivity is required, but scholars have not clarified how the different elements of subjectivity braid together historically and culturally. In the chapters that follow, I hope to provide more precise thinking on this area. Our task would be to take seriously the particularization of gender and sexuality in blackened people in the context of a humanism that, in its desire to universalize, ritualistically posits Black femaleness as opacity, inversion, and limit. In such a context, the Black body is characterized by plasticity, whereby raciality arbitrarily remaps blackened gender and sexuality
Sample complete. Ready to continue?